football on Off the Ball.
Halftime show, what was it, 27 minutes long?
Yeah.
That's shocking. That's absolutely shocking. The players should be the main focus here. I mean, it's a game of football we've all come to see. We haven't come to see the Muppets. And
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they are, show up. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
All right. You are welcome along to the Ryan line. Shane Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Nathan. It's good to hear your voice. I don't know who that other guy was, but this is what it's supposed to be.
I need to start with an apology because apparently the other guy never even bothered to record a podcast last week.
The funny thing is, I was very tired from coming home from the Open, and I didn't even think of that until you emailed me yesterday. I was like, I don't think I did one yesterday, last week. Shane is very
committed to this podcast, listeners.
Yeah, the scheduling is done by you guys, and I basically always say yes to whatever time you say. So I'm not taking the blame. I'm just saying it completely skipped my attention. I was like, I don't think I did one. So, but look, I'm still riding high on County Mayo, Nathan.
I'd sing the green and red of Mayo, but I woke up this morning and my voice had finally said, "We're done."
Are you from County Mayo?
I am from County Mayo, yes. I'm from Ballyhaunas. I had the greatest, both the greatest honor of my life and the greatest night of my life on Tuesday when I got to host the homecoming for the team in Ballyhaunas. So the captain of the team, Jack Coyne, is from Ballyhaunas, from my hometown. A lot younger than I am. And so they brought the trophy, the Sam Maguire trophy, and the entire squad to Ballyhaunas on Tuesday. Ballyhaunas is a town of around 2,000 people. I think there was around 10,000 to 12,000 people in the town. And
that night, yeah.
And we basically spent about 3 hours on stage just letting the players sing songs and feel the love of the people of Mayo. And yes, my life has felt very, very different since about 5 o'clock last Sunday, because our entire personality as Mayo people has been this. It has been the second you tell anybody from outside of Ireland, from inside of Ireland, where you're from, the Gaelic football team not winning in All-Ireland since 1951 is the first thing that's always mentioned. And it's not just, and I don't know, you maybe have read and you've seen all of the history since then. Because everyone is wondering, like, there's never been a celebration like it for any All-Ireland Championship, football, hurling, you name it. And everyone's asking, well, what would need to happen for this to be repeated somewhere else? And you're going, it's not even just the length of time. It's not the 75 years. It's that Mayo have lost 11 finals since 1989 in all manner of heartbreaking fashion. also had two replays in there. So 13 different opportunities to win one and didn't manage to do it.
That's crazy.
Until, where do we go? We'd our best player sent off in the 90s for nothing, for absolutely nothing against Meath, who then went on to win it with the flukiest bounce of a ball in the last minute you have ever seen. It was sort of like Birkdale-style conditions that turned out in Croke Park that day, when the ball, which would normally take a normal bounce in the goalkeeper's arms, suddenly sprung 80 yards up into the air over the bar. We scored, in one final, we scored two own goals in the space of about 10 minutes. Now, to put that in context, Gaelic football is very different to soccer in terms of own goals. They never, ever happen. There had never been an own goal in a final in history, and Mayo scored two of them in 10 minutes. We have lost finals by a point in the last minute to losing finals by about 20 points. Everything that you could possibly do, we had done it. And then somehow on Sunday, with very little expectation, we managed to get over the line.
Well, I've been reading about it. I didn't know anything about it. I've been reading about it since. And this guy, Dave McKenna, I don't know if you know him, but he's an American, but he went over and he wrote about it for Defector. He wrote a great article But my understanding is when you won last time, your team misbehaved during a funeral and they all had to die before you could win again. And they did. And in 2023, and this was your first chance since that team was all dead. And so it seems like your team seems really classy this year. I loved his speech, Jack, I forget his last name.
Jack Coyne, yeah. His speech was awesome. Amazing. Stick your chest out. That's all we say in Ballyhonus now. Stick your chest out.
Stick your chest out. That's right. So now you can keep winning because you didn't get cursed again.
Obviously the curse has been a thing since like Mayo's first final after 51 was 89, and I was very young then. But my memory is there was talk of the curse then, and it really did start to build. And obviously, it was really terrible thing around a decade ago. So Mayo 10 years ago ended up playing Dublin in a load of All-Ireland finals and semi-finals, and Dublin ended up in maybe the greatest team of all time, and Mayo used pushed them right to the pin of their collar, but always just lose and couldn't get over the line, and to have that good a team and not win it was always, well, we just, you know, there's only about five or six of them left, and you're kind of going, these guys are in their like 70s and 80s, and you know, are these great All-Ireland winners who had contributed so much. And I remember Aidan O'Shea, who was one of the, is Mayo's longest serving player, more championship appearances than any outfield player ever. And he went and met a couple of them a few years ago. And, you know, he just spoke, I remember, so brilliantly of how disgraceful the talk of the curse had become, that basically people are like wishing death upon these men of, we just need, who do we kill off next? You're like, these are some of the greatest people Mayo have ever produced. And just because... But our new manager, Andy Moran, who, like yourself, started, you know, his media career as on an off-the-ball podcast. So we expect great things from you down the track, Shay, eventually. Great. Eventually. Andy had no time for any of that nonsense. He just always went with the, we got beaten by a better team in the day. We didn't turn up. These things happen. Yeah. Then he set us free. And here we are. We're on Thursday. And already there are things in the diary for November, December, when we're going back celebrating again. Tuesday night was one of those, I don't know if you have this, but we were sitting outside because you couldn't even get into the pubs. So we went down to the local shop, the gym owned by one of my mates, and we bought a load of cans. We sat outside on the street just having a few beers, and it was like 20 of us there, I'd say. We were all in school together and had never been together, all of us, since. And people had flown in from America, people have flown in from England just to be there. And you're like, actually, this is sort of what it's all about. Yeah, there's the moment, and yeah, there's the winning, and there's the sports side. But actually, the whole point of it is this, that everyone's in it together.
That's amazing, man. No, I've never had that around sports. I think it's so unique, the concept of playing for your hometown, that you have to, or your home county. We don't have anything like that. I thought it was so cool. I knew the basic broad outlines of how with this you have to play for your home county and the kind of, you know, the traditions that entailed and everything. But
to give it again, you know the bit that they're all amateur and they don't get paid.
You don't get paid.
You know, within that, a lot of them would still be college students or might have jobs that work for them being able to train three or four times
a week. Like the Olympics.
Exactly. But certainly a decade ago, not so much now, but certainly when Mayo were at their best a decade ago, of their sort of, say, 30, 35-man squad, about 12 of them were living in Dublin. So that meant that they were having to travel down to Mayo from Dublin at least three, if not four times a week. They would finish work at 5 o'clock, get straight in their car, get down to Mayo about 8 o'clock, be late to train and get out of the car, go train for a couple of hours and get back and drive straight back to Dublin to 1 a.m. and they go to work the next day again.
It's nuts. It's nuts. It's also nuts that it's like the thing that always occurred to me, I mean, it's an obvious observation, but with the county system, it's like, okay, well, Dublin is just so much more people. That it's like anytime you beat them, it must be incredible. Or I guess not. There's a huge imbalance there, right? I mean,
it's the sort of unspoken bit about the GAA is that, like, there are lots of very small counties who can simply never win it now.
Well, and I was going to ask you that. I was like, you guys have obviously been very successful to keep reaching finals, but are there counties that just can never do it?
More and more, I would say. Now, what Mayo had, and I heard, I think it was Joe Brodie was on with Owen earlier in the week, of a former player, and he was making the point, actually it was Mick Foley, a journalist from the Sunday Times, making the point that, so a county like Tyrone, which would never have won All-Irelands, which would have had a good tradition, but not competed, suddenly started winning them in the early 2000s. And they've always just been thereabout since, because you kind of get to such a level that everybody that comes behind you also has to get to that level. And that's sort of what Mayo have had as well, that even though it was a real surprise they got there this year, because they've been so good for kind of 20 years, there's a level of, high performance is what we would always say here, that you get to. Whereas, again, if you're a footballer for Leitrim, which would be a very, very small rural county, you're just never going to have enough players to get you to that next level. And it's, in one way, it's going to get worse, because, again, traditionally, say, people of my generation who live in Dublin, probably when they had kids, would move back down to Mayo. So you'd come and you'd work, and then you'd go back home. Whereas now, that rarely happens. So, and a lot of the clubs in Dublin would be full of country people's kids.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting in the next sort of 10 years how many of those kids go back and play for their home county, because if your parents are from the county, you can go back and play there.
Oh, so is it like dual citizenship? So if
your kids
can play for Dublin or
Mayo. Yes. But the difficulty is, again, they've only ever lived in Dublin, and you're suddenly going, play for Mayo and drive down to Mayo four times a week.
Across the country.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, anyways, we're not worried about the future. We don't care about that. We're living in the now.
No. This is
great. We're living in the now. The Druid
asked. It's genuinely one of the best sports stories I've heard, and it gave me a light feeling to read about it, because it's like, wow, that doesn't happen much anymore. Right. This is very, in this day and age, we don't get much of that.
No. No, the last week has been a bit of a sort of dreamlike scenario. Yeah. Like, there's a load of footage of just different parts of the homecomings going to different towns, that it's very AI generated feel of it. Of that thing, if you said, what would happen if Mayo won the All Ireland, and everyone went absolutely wild? Like, there's a I saw a picture of in Westport, and I don't know if you've been to Westport, real touristy town, and they're outside Matt Molloy's pub, which is probably the most famous pub in Mayo, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and there are just thousands of people on the street, and the players have been like carried down through the street, and the photo outside, and you're like, this isn't real. Like, this is not something we actually thought would ever happen. So yes, amazing. If my voice ever recovers, I might return to Mayo at some stage over the coming days. One of my friends had a great idea of hiring a bus on Saturday and basically going to all the same towns the players went to earlier in the week and having a drink in each of them.
Oh, that's fun. That would be really cool.
The Druid asks, how do you get that grin off Nathan's face? You don't.
No, you got to enjoy this.
It's going to last a while.
I'm trying to think of like the happiest I've ever been at a sports event. And I think it was when, I don't know if you remember this or you know much about it, but when the Patriots were undefeated and lost to the New York Giants in the Super Bowl. This is when I was like...
Yes.
Early 20s. I remember being happy for about a month after that, of just like being so ecstatic. But
and was that, because it was both the Giants and it ended the Patriots on beaten
perfect.
Streak?
Perfect. Yeah. And it was a dramatic game. I happened to be at the point in my life where I was the biggest fan possible, right? Like, it wouldn't happen in my life anymore. I don't know. I'm envious of you, man.
I think that's the key base.
I will die without ever having that feeling about
it. That is it. And like, I'm in a way, I now will also, without ever having this feeling again. Because
the two
things I always wanted were Liverpool to win the league, and then Liverpool won the league in COVID and he couldn't be there. And then I got to be there last year when they won the league and got to commentate on it and to be in the stadium. And I kind of had a bit of an appreciation of, oh, now it's happened. Nothing like this will ever... I was always like, oh, well, Mayo have to win the All-Ireland, and that's just not going to happen. Like, this is sort of why you love the sport, that you get this bit out of it. But there's nothing. And even, I thought I was invested in Liverpool because I've supported them and gone to hundreds and hundreds of games and all of that sort of stuff for 30, 35 years. But then when it's your own, I kind of celebrated it on my own, if that makes sense. Because like most of my mates don't support Liverpool.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this is like, I'm looking out at thousands of people from the stage on Tuesday, and every one of them you recognize, every one of them you know from somewhere.
Yeah,
you've seen. It might have been 25 years since you've seen them, but you know them. So yes,
that's awesome.
Druid grin not coming off face anytime soon. I haven't seen you since you got back from England. Reviews of Birkdale.
Yeah, well, okay.
Media center food for starters.
I can't even talk about that, Nathan. I can't talk about it. Do you go try to find that tweet now? Go try to find that tweet. Doesn't exist.
Why did you? I was on holidays for 2 weeks, so I was very much offline. You didn't do it again, did you?
Wait, are you?
I'm serious.
I thought you knew the story. Or
no, I don't know the story. Sorry, I have been. I was offline for 2 weeks, and then
let's just say the media center food stunk.
Oh wow.
And then there's a gag order on what happened next. I can't even talk about it.
I'm frantically going through.
No, there is no tweet. There is no tweet.
You had
You'll
to delete
never find
it.
A tweet.
And like, was this a legal reason you had to delete your tweet?
I'm not allowed to talk about it. I'm gagged. So let me just, you can, by implication, you can think whatever you want to think. No, it was an okay trip, honestly. It was hot. Like that was the crazy thing, was how hot, like 85 degrees in the UK is compared to, 100 degrees here when you at least have AC in places. You're still looking for it.
I'm not going to get it. Am I not?
You're not going to find anything. I'll tell you later. Tell you after we.
Apologies, listeners. Yeah. He'll tell me all the good stuff when we get off air.
I'm sorry. I know that's. Annoying.
I presume the listeners have. They were more on top of things then and are somewhat aware.
It's not that big a story. It's not that big a story. It's just an interesting story. There's no reason the listeners would know unless they're. But so okay, let's move on from that.
Right. Wow. Aside from that, how was your Birkdale experience? Yeah, the heat with no aircon is a killer.
It was actually super hot. It was a combination. This will sound incredibly ungrateful. I'll win no friends for this because you're at the Open Championship covering it. It's great, but a combination of I was in this weird little room with a shitty bed and like incredibly hot. It was a tough week, to be honest. I really didn't get much sleep, but I still had a lot of fun. The golf was still interesting. The course was interesting enough. I wouldn't call it my greatest Open experience, though. It just wasn't. But it was good. The golf was good. It was a weird kind of year, right? I mean, after Rory winning, it was a very weird year for the majors. Wyndham Clark was the only other winner that you go, yeah, that was completely expected. He was on amazing form. But even that was defined by the fans kind of hating him. So then you had Aaron Rye, the strangeness of Aronimink, I think, was my favorite major of the year. But then this one, like Ryan Fox was fantastic. And I think I didn't know that much about Ryan Fox's personality. I really enjoyed him. I liked his his winner's press conference. He obviously played awesome at the end. He made a huge putt to win, completely deserving winner. But just a kind of strange, a strange year and a strange end to the year, largely defined, I think, by Scottie Scheffler being so close but not quite being able to make putts at literally every single major. It was just a lot of thoughts about it, but that'll give you the basic idea. Kind of a weird experience, not my best Open experience, and the golf was sort of, it felt like Cam Young was going to get in the playoff and that was going to be the interesting thing, and then Ryan Fox just went out and stole it away from everybody.
Sheila, nicely connecting all this together, said, did Scotty disrespect a funeral traveling through Port Stewart last year? # forever second. He's cursed.
Hey, can I ask, did people ask the old players before they passed, like, is this even true? I mean, was it actually
a
thing?
Question. I'm fairly sure it was not 100% true.
Right, because the tone of it sounds like, oh, it's sort of like, the Cubs had this thing where somebody killed a goat, right? I don't know if you've heard about that, but there was a goat curse on the Cubs, or like the Babe Ruth curse on the Red Sox.
No, I don't think any player ever went, you know what? I knew it that day in Foxford when we were going past the funeral. we would pay for this for the rest of our lives. I knew it. I was saying to the lads on the bus, enjoy this while you can. It'll never happen again.
Yeah. I don't know. With Scotty's like...
Yeah, talk about Scotty then. So we have another question here saying, is Scotty's next major win the US Senior Open? Also from Sheelan. So the story of the year, in a way, and this is not to disrespect Ryan Fox or Aaron Rye, is Scotty almost being great and ending with nothing.
Yeah, and it was just like he couldn't make a putt, you know, or he wasn't quite consistent. Now, it's funny, if you look at his stats, where he's dipped this year, as you might expect, is not so much putting. His putting has been pretty good. It's been his approach game is just, his ball striking is just that little bit off. Now, again, the standard is incredibly high for him. He's still one of the best players in the world, but he's not like the superhuman that he was the last 2 years. But yeah, it's funny, like even in this 3M tournament, God, where was it? At Trump National in Doral, he's playing well and he's running up against guys like at Trump National, Cam Young just went off and then Jackson Koivin just going crazy at the 3M. So a lot of it's sort of not him, but then some of it is him. The majors felt like him where he's just not quite getting there. But I think we see this like it's natural. I don't think in men's professional golf you can win two majors back to back, right? I don't think that standard is there anymore and hasn't been since Tiger Woods. There are these natural ebbs and flows. And so I think the real story with Scotty will be next year and just see like if he gets that winning touchback. But, you know, it's so funny how small the margins are, even for a guy like that, where it's like, okay, you're going to go. Here's what's going to happen in 2026. You're going to be the best player in the world still. You're going to win one tournament that nobody cares about. You're going to finish second, what is it, five times now. But it's just going to be, you're just not going to have that extra gear to kick it into. And it's going to be sort of like a lost year for you in terms of legacy, in terms of winning majors and things like that.
It's probably the line I use most on this podcast, but it just underlines how great Tiger was. Where he consistently managed to keep it ticking over. It reminded me this year for Scotty a little bit of Brooks Koepka, maybe 2019. Now, I know Koepka won one in 2019, but I remember the other couple of majors where he just never hold the putts at the right time. And his putting, he even spoke about it at the time. I remember Port Rush when Shane Lowry won it, and Brooks was sort of there, thereabouts, whatever, out really having a chance. And you're like, I just need to get back practicing my putting. You're like, well, you were as hot as you're ever going to be. This was the time to practice your putting and win a couple more majors. And I know you're saying that statistics-wise, Scotty's putting isn't as bad as people are saying. Yeah. It did feel over certainly the last three majors and even to a certain extent the Masters as well, that he never held the putts that mattered. He never held the putt.
100%.
Put he needed to really put everybody else under pressure that we sort of naturally expected even last week with Jackson Koivin, where you're sort of going, yeah, this kid is good, but Scotty's just going to go on a run, and he never seemed to find that sort of flow.
And it's the funny thing about Scotty is like he's never been the guy like Spieth or even like Koivin seems, where he's going to just or Tiger very much was, where he's going to bury these devastating putts. And so let me just to give you an idea, strokes gains approach, right? 21-22 when he came on the scene, he was fourth. Then the next 3 years, he's first. So 2022, he won his first major. He's first. 24, he's first. 25, he's first. This year, he's 10th. And 10th is still incredible, right? So you don't want, like, there's nothing wrong with being 10th, but it is just that little difference. And so I think in my mind, you're like, okay, it looks like he's not hitting the big putts, which is true. But I think the deeper truth is that he's not giving himself putts that are as good as he had in the past. Now, when he wouldn't win majors, what was it? The LA Country Club year, then it was his putting, right? His approach game, his tee game was elite, and he really was a bad putter. He was something like 120th or something like that. Now, I mean, look at this year. He's fifth in strokes gained putting. So if you took Scotty being fifth in strokes gained putting with his skill with the irons last year or the year before, he's winning every single tournament and he's doing it going away. And so that's the difference this year is the approach game. But yeah, I mean, but you're also right in that, okay, let's use Sam Burns as an example, where it's like he's the best putter in the game, right? He's one of the best putters in the world. And the statistics bear that out, and yet he never seems to make a big putt in majors. I think putting ultimately, and it's like Scotty, he's fifth this year, and you go, oh my God, if Scotty Scheffler's the fifth best putter, we're all in trouble. Problem is, putting is more variable than any other part of the game. And so it's just like it doesn't really – anyone who talks about like who's a great putter, even when they talk about it with Koivun, I'm like, it doesn't really matter – that much. Yes, it will. It's like that's what's going to put you high on the money list, but it's not what's going to get you wins, because week in, week out, it changes so much that you can't count on it. You can't be like Jackson Koivun or Scotty Scheffler are going to win because of their putting. It just never happens. Sam Burns is going to win because of his putting. It never happens, because week to week it's so different.
We need a stat which is strokes gained putting when within five shots of the lead on a Sunday.
Yeah. Or like when we care. Strokes gain putting when we care.
Yes.
When it matters.
strokes gain putting on puts I see on TV that I read a lot into.
Yeah, exactly. Like strokes gain putting majors would be, just the major strokes gain would be interesting over time, I think. Over like a period of 10 years, that would be kind of an interesting stat.
Question for Shane. I can't believe that it's 8 months till Magnolia Lane comes around again. Will they ever move the PGA Championship out of the US and in turn move the date, or do you think it has to stay in the February to August golf calendar? Thanks. Hope you enjoyed Royal Birkdale, is the message from Highside Pass. Well, I think you've got your answer to that one.
Well, I think I enjoyed Birkdale. I did enjoy it in some ways. I'm laughing at this question because Magnolia Lane feels like what you would call Augusta if you had a video game that you made and didn't have the rights to.
It's what
we would have Augusta.
In sports bulletins back in the day, you would try and not repeat the say. So you'd start with today at the Masters, he had a great day at Augusta down in Magnolia Lane.
No, I don't think it's going to change. I certainly don't think the Open is ever going to change, and I don't think the PGA wants to go back. Maybe I'm alone here, but people keep harping on this, and I'm like, what are you doing? It's golf should have an off season. Look, they're going to have the fall season if you're a junkie and you want to watch people try to fight for PGA Tour cards and things like that. But the fall's always been like that. The concentrated calendar is awesome. I mean, it makes things matter. It puts it all into this season, right? And that's one of Rolapp's main goals, is to craft this notion of a season and have it be tighter when we all care. And then, you still have the Ryder Cup in every 2 years. And I know in Ireland, you guys are huge fans of the President's Cup, so you'll be watching that this fall. But no, I don't know. Nate, what do you think, Nathan? I like it. I'm like, just calm down with all this talk. Like, we don't need one major in January, one major in July, one major in December. It's crazy. That's just crazy talk to me. I mean, look at tennis, man. Like, okay, the Australian Open's kind of fun to watch at times. I'm not saying it's not, but because of the time zone difference and because it's weirdly stuck in January, you're kind of like, what is this? What are we doing? It's like tennis doesn't matter until the French Open. Like just cool out on this stuff.
I would probably move the PGA back to August, and that would be it. I think the condensed calendar probably in the last couple of years has become just a little bit too condensed between March and July. I think we've seen this year that we've had too many events within that should be big that haven't been, because Rory hasn't been there or Scotty hasn't been there. But at the same time, I'm with you, and look, there's two different audiences here is the thing when we always talk about this. One is the people who listen to a podcast like this, which are the golf nerd audience. And I love the next few months of the year because, and we have a question here from Jerzy. Hi lads, crazy how much time is spent thinking about how the PGA Tour can avoid the NFL season. Having the last major in July and the FedEx over by September is insane. Great for European golf though. And I'm sort of with that. Like, it's a really weird spell in Europe right now where the European Tour is off until, I think we have another, they were off last week, they're off this week, and I think there might be another two blank weeks. And you're going, this is the middle of the summer when the weather is at its best. Surely you would be playing golf.
Yeah.
But actually, once it kicks back in and we start getting into the Irish Open and the PGA at Wentworth, even PGA, the Alfred Dunhill, you get into the final run of the Race to Dubai, there are loads of great tournaments. And it looks like a lot of the players are coming back. I saw Ludwig was announced, was it for the French Open yesterday? Victor Hovland is going to be playing a little bit more here as well. And I think if you love your golf, that's a great spell. And I saw Ben Coley putting up yesterday on it that really, if you look at it now, Europe for, you know, having been destroyed by the PGA Tour and this agreement and all of that, actually, they kind of have September, October, November, December, and from next year, January, when they'll have the Middle East swing and there won't really be on anything in the PGA Tour. So you've got a minimum of 5 months. And as he said, they also really have July with the Scottish Open and the Open. So the European Tour somehow ended up with the best golf for half of the year. I really felt this year that spell, like Hilton Head is such a great golf course. Should be one of the top 10 tournaments of the year. And you stick it the week after the Masters. And we've spent so long building up to the Masters. I'm like, I'm not quite sure this matters now. Like, Rory's never turning up to us.
But it's always been right after the Masters.
Though. I know, but...
It's been the week after the Masters. And that's kind of what makes it special. I mean, like, I get it. You know, I think Rory defines things a little bit, maybe over there. Him not showing up was a blow to the tournament. But it was still a great tournament. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think I just disagree on that front. I see where you're coming from. I truly do. What's going to define it, I think, is once they get this championship challenger series thing going, can you actually get people to show up for all these championship series events? And Rory's the big problem there. Rory's already like, you know, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago. It's like, what does he want from the PGA Tour? But I think truthfully what he wants is like, I just don't want to play that much golf.
Yeah.
Rory will be one of the defining things of, can you get this guy on board? And if you can't, are you going to have like a double standard, right? It's just like, well, Scotty, we kind of need you to be at all these events, but there's really nothing we can do about Rory. But I think if you get everybody there all the time, I don't think it's going to feel that condensed. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see in a couple of years.
It is quite the sales pitch that's going to be needed from Brian Rolapp when you're going, so we're going to have a Champions Tour and a Challenger Tour. And we're not going to guarantee you all the best players are going to be on the Champions Tour, but we can guarantee you there'll be no good players on the Challenger Tour. 20 million upfront, please.
Yeah. Well, you've probably seen in the last week, they're rolling out announcements of tournaments that are going to be, you know, they're kind of putting pressure on sponsors by going, all right, this one's set now, this one's set now. I think we'll probably get an announcement on Torrey Pines if they haven't already. About a sponsor. So yeah, they're trying to get that secured. And then my guess is, Nathan, once they do that, they're going to go out early with their TV rights deal to try to say, buy in now. I don't even know if they want people to see what it's like. I think they're going to want people to like, go on faith and be like, pay up, buddies, because we've got everything set. It's going to be great. And we're not going to give you a year to realize that, oh no, Rory's never playing. Rory only plays the majors now.
Question from the beard, which I feel might have come in more around the time of Birkdale, but question for Shane. My anecdotal evidence is that everyone I know thinks Bryson was at it. What is amazing to me is the online commentary where fans seem to either not know the rules or just plain ignore them. The support for Bryson at the Open was also astounding, given that he allegedly, you know, I'm not sure even if allegedly in front of it should imply anything around Bryson. My question is this. Do you think the difference of opinions on this are clearly divided between people who know the rules and play the game and people who are casual watchers and think rules are dumb? Are the supporters of Bryson the same cry about balls and divots, don't ever hole out, and have breakfast balls or mulligans or whatever other daft woke thing they want relief from?
Woke? So like, wait, being okay with cheating is woke now in the Beards formulation? So when he says Bryson was at it, that means he thinks he was cheating? I don't get
that. He thinks when Bryson's at it, he thinks Bryson knew what he was doing.
Knew what he was doing. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. You know, like I think there were people who in good faith analyzed the video and were like, I don't think that he stomped on the grass that actually helped his backswing. Now, maybe that's just like live propagandists or whatever, but I think there were some people who had problems with the decision on the merits of it. Then there were people who had problems with the decision on the merits of, it's crazy that you can go back and retroactively assess this when nobody was there to call him on it, and that you don't, in their opinions, maybe you don't have definitive video evidence. It was a weird situation. I'm just going to say that. And I'm not a Bryson guy. You know that. I'm not a big Bryson fan. I think like his whole, the way he carried on after it, he's just like such a phony. It's crazy. His personality is so grating. Like his facial expressions, it's like he's always on YouTube, right? Or it's like he's always in a YouTube thumbnail. I find it very off-putting. And so that's the context for me saying that. I think it was a weird penalty to assess. I don't necessarily think it was the wrong. I don't think looking at it, it was wrong to say like, okay, it looks like he kind of did this. You certainly can't read intentionality into it. And we never talked about this, but the dumbest part of the whole thing was the open, like the spokesman going, it was an accident that he did this, but we're going to assess the penalty. It's like, what are you talking about? How do you know it was an accident? You have no idea. Maybe it was an accident, maybe it wasn't, but you have no idea, and you make yourself look bad and make the RNA look bad by doing this because it's obviously some kind of like weird plea deal situation where you're giving him this, you're telling everybody it was an accident as some sort of like thing that you talked about, right, in order to assess the penalty. So I thought that looked corrupt, and I thought that looked like kind of weird. Yeah, I just thought it was like a – it's just like a – strange thing that, okay, we have video on this guy doing this thing. Now we can go back and assess this penalty where you wouldn't have had video on many people doing this stuff. And it's like, I just thought it was a good point of like, if that were Rory, were you going to give him that penalty? I bet you wouldn't have, right? No, no. If everything was exactly the same, I bet Rory McIlroy wouldn't have gotten that penalty. So I just thought it was uneven and strange and like maybe not even definitive proof that he was doing it, even though I would go along with people who are like, okay, something looks a little fishy here. Whether he did it on purpose or not, it looks like maybe there's something wrong here. It was just strange, and I didn't like the way they did it.
There's a lot in it, and I agree with you. Yeah. The way it was handled became a bit farcical. Even allowing him to go back out with the rules officials. Like, what was the intention of that, aside from, again, almost being a YouTube thumbnail that, look at this is going to look great on social as I'm losing my shit with the rules officials and I know they're never going to change their mind. Again, you're able... Now, part of it didn't make me think, if he was that able to go back very quickly and find exactly where he hit his ball from, again, these guys know their every movement. They know exactly what they were doing. And there is an argument that, well, Bryson obviously doesn't play a huge amount of links golf and was maybe a little bit more reckless than he needed to be. He was also unfortunate that from the camera angle that we saw most of, the sort of way he pushed the grass back as he stepped through flowed in beautifully with the line of his swing that it suddenly longer interrupted it. But again, I don't think he could have done that necessarily intentionally. And the bigger question mark about all of this, and listen, it's across a lot of sports. We have it in Gaelic games here with a thing called Hawkeye, which decides whether the ball goes over the bar or not. Like, they don't have it in every ground, but they play games from competition, the same competition in grounds where they have it, where they don't. That, and I'm not going to cast aspersions on Ryan Fox, but he's a very obvious example because he's a sort of middle-of-the-road golfer who nobody was watching until suddenly he rocked up and, you know, played incredible golf on Saturday. So we didn't see every shot he hit on Thursday. We didn't see every shot he hit on Friday because we trust all of these guys. But then what we're going to do is certain guys, certain players who are the most in the spotlight, everything you do, we're going to slow it right down. We're going to get 10 camera angles and we're going to slow it right down and see if you made any little mistake, and we're going to screw you if you did.
I know. And what's a little bit crazy to me is it was very VAR-ish in that there was an official with their group, right? That's what got me. It's like you had a chance to call it on him while it was happening, and then you kind of came back and did it later. I'm not saying it was the wrong call. I truly am not. I think I probably lean on it was the right call, but it's just bizarre. It's just a bizarre kind of double standard, and the whole thing is weird.
One more on that then. Hi, Nathan and Shane. Love the pod. Wondering a couple of weeks on what the view is now of Bryson. Even the talk of Trump getting involved should be humiliating. Do you think it's made it more difficult for Bryson to return to the tour?
Yeah, the detail when he tried to call Trump is just like, what are you doing? What on earth did you think was going to happen? I think the last show we did before you went on vacation. By the way, I hope Italy was fun. I hope that was great. But we talked about how, you know, Trump ruined the World Cup basically for the American team. So it's like, Bryson, what are you thinking? You think he has any influence of the RNA? I mean, like, they won't even go to his course. Trying to call Trump, it's just like baby stuff. I mean, I just thought it was such a terrible look. I hated it. I hated it.
Last one. Question for Shane. Heard you say a few months ago that Jackson Coyvan will be the next world number one. How long until it happens?
I don't remember saying that.
I think I said that.
Okay, I was going to say.
We had a question, I think, at one stage as to post Scotty, who's next in line to be number one. We were trying to decide why, you know, will Schauffele have a resurgence or one of those? And I think I may have gone with Jackson Coyven, which right now again makes me look very smart.
Yeah, I was gonna say it wasn't. I don't think it was me, but I will say I am like, this kid is really special. I think watching him, you just get a feeling from him that you didn't really get from like even a guy like Morikawa. You didn't get that feeling from, and he's won two majors. He's great. Definitely didn't get it from Matt Wolf. Maybe a little from Victor Hovland, but just the sense of, there's some special combination of skill and mentality in this kid that is wise beyond his years. I mean, the way you look at all the winning he did in the amateur level and at Auburn, just winning everything in sight, and you're like, well, obviously this is crazy. He's really skilled, but there's a different thing on the PGA Tour. Missed his first cut. I watched his first round with a lot of interest because I just do think he's special. And then to win, and the way he won, making big putts, holding it together down the stretch, it was really something else. I am all in on him. He had a quote after, and you may have seen this, where he was talking about, you know, I go up and down the range, and, you know, I watch people on the range, and I don't think I'm, like, I look at them and I go, these guys are all better than me. Or, like, a lot of them are, like, more impressive than me. They hit it farther, all that stuff. And he's like, but I just think I beat people with my mentality. And it's like, man, for him to know that, and he's not one of these like speed freaks, right? He's not somebody who's hitting the ball 360 yards. He hits it plenty far, but there's just something so complete and intelligent about him. And you throw in the fact that he can, you know, again, this goes against what I said, and it doesn't matter in the long run, but he can hit some bombs. He can save pars from some crazy places. And we saw it on the ninth hole, especially at the 3M. He had a big par save that would have, you know, kept him three shots up on Scotty. I think he's awesome. I think he's awesome, and I think he's exciting. I think the Americans are dimwits if they don't put him on the President's Cup team this year. I think it's like, get this guy involved in all of this stuff now, because he is, I think he will be. I don't know if he's going to be the next world number one after Scotty, but I think he's got the potential to be a world number one. He's got the potential to win a lot of majors. I think he's a generational kind of guy. I mean, I think it's very exciting.
Definitely wise beyond his years. Every interview, you're sort of Scotty-esque in a way that he talks, in that I don't know if he's ever going to be your Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth level of interesting, but very thoughtful, sort of very humble, but knows how good he is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, it's, so he's only, it's crazy because he's 19, and man, Nathan, you probably feel this too. The older we get, it's like, you're like talking about his quote personality, you're like, what am I expecting here? This is, you know what I mean?
It's
like,
I'm still weird. Shocked like, that, just how eloquent he is in general at 19.
Yeah. I know. And it's like, man, there's like a part of me that's like, just kind of leave him alone for now. Like, he can't, like, he's not that different from the kid he was at 12 at this point. Just somebody who's like, what do you do? What's your deal? Well, I've grown up playing golf constantly. It's everything I do. Golf is everything. And he talks about it. He just loves golf, right? I mean, obviously he's going to, but that's all he cares about and thinks about. And you're like, all right, let's ease up on expecting any like big personality or adult opinions from this guy. Let's not turn him into Rory like immediately.
Yeah, he's 21 now. Just gone 21.
21.
So, yeah.
Did I say 19?
He good. No, he very good. I think that's where we're done. My voice has just about managed to get through.
Good job.
I'll tell you all next week exactly what happened with Shane and the food. So don't you worry about that. I'll put it in the Discord channel, off the record.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll tell you, and then you can be like, sources have told me.
Yes. Get your questions in on the Discord channel. Get them into golfweekly@offtheball.com. You can send us a message on Instagram, whatever way works for you. We'll be back to talk more about Mayo next week. Shane Ryan, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they are, show up. Of course you want to play at the weekend.